Hello and welcome back to the Mind Talk podcast with myself, Edwin. We have someone from the world of badminton, and that's something that we haven't really touched on this podcast. So we have Jordan Hart. Jordan, how are you doing?
Good, how are you?
I'm not too bad. Thank you for coming on today. Thank you for accepting the invitation.
No problem, my pleasure.
Good. So I'm going to ask you a question that anyone that's listened to this podcast will know what's coming up next. So talk to us about your early experience with sports.
So I think I was quite a keen sports person when I was young. Did a little bit of everything. Would always try to my hand to anything. Was quite okay at most things. So there was no barriers for me in terms of I never really thought, oh, I'm not sure I want to do that. I was doing everything from rugby, football, cricket, netball from a really, really young age. And I think, and still would do it now, to be honest with you.
What was your favourite at that age?
Good question. It actually wasn't badminton, I would say. My dad was a boxing coach, so I also did a little bit of boxing. So I probably would have gone down that avenue, I think, if it wasn't for badminton and for my mum, maybe not steering it in another direction. I just loved doing everything, to be honest with you. I was much more comfortable on a pitch or on a court than I was anywhere else, to be honest with you.
Okay. And then when did the focus move towards badminton?
So basically I started by luck. My dad is really, really sporty. Wanted me to do everything. We went swimming one morning, and as we were leaving the leisure centre, there was a badminton club that was starting. It was 50p to play.
Wow.
So he threw me in there and said, you're going to go play badminton. And that's where it started, really. And I still continue to do all the other stuff. But around, I'd say 11, 12, my parents sat me down and said, okay, this is starting to cost a lot of money. This is starting to take up a lot of time. Are we going to do this properly, or is this just a hobby? Which I then wanted to do properly. So that's why I am, I guess, who I am today.
It's so great that you had parents who were there to support you to this point. What is it about their support that do you think benefited you during the early stages of your journey?
I think I'm in a really fortunate position, just to put that straight out the bat. Like, my parents were in a position where they wanted to and were able to be supportive. There's so many different scenarios for so many different people. So I'm very fortunate that I had both parents that were able to support that. Dad was off to work, earning the money for the family. Mum was able to be at home, so was able to give up that time to throw me in the car and drive me around the country and do that kind of stuff for me. I never heard no from my parents. So there was never a time where I said, okay, I want to go to this place to play this tournament. And it was never no. It was always, okay, how can we do that? But no, I know that that's very a fortunate position to be in. Still to this day, if I needed anything from them, they would be there in a flash. So yeah, I'm really lucky, really.
Yeah. So you were playing badminton. What was it that stood out from badminton compared to some of the other racket sports?
I think, to be honest, it was just luck that it was badminton. I always had quite good hand eye. Like I said before, I was always quite okay at most things. But I think badminton is really, it is quite a cool sport. Of course, I'm biased, but it is quite cool. It's super fast. It requires a lot of different things to be a badminton player. Probably the average person will probably think, you can go play badminton in your back garden, which is which I get a lot. But it's quite a complex sport. There's a lot of things physically, mentally that you have to take into consideration. So I think the complexity of the sport is really interesting.
Yeah. What were some of the challenges around training, especially? Let's like focus more on the early days training compared to now. What were the biggest challenges then?
So I'm from a really, really rural, small area in like the most southerly, westerly part of Wales.
Yeah.
So in the very early stages, it's okay to go and pay 50p and go and play at your local leisure centre. But when you then start to want to become a badminton player or an athlete and live where I'm from, it's really difficult. And I have a lot of friends actually, especially in my where I live, football and rugby is really popular. And I had lots of girls and boyfriends that maybe, you know, got to a certain level in their sport, in football especially, got to an academy, say like a Swansea academy or something, but then to go to that next stage where you have to start branching out, the long drives and stuff like that, it's really difficult. And I think also being from such a small area, I was obviously one of a few that played. Yeah. And obviously to train, I need other people. Yeah. It's not something that I can do alone. You always need to be pushing for the next level, the next stage. So that was definitely difficult, especially when I was younger, because you don't really think, oh, badminton, such like a common sport, and there wasn't a lot of players in the area, really.
So what, did your parents have to take you to our areas to train?
Yeah, so very quickly, I kind of had a little bit of a spark for it. We could see that I was okay at it, and I was getting on quite well. And for example, where I live, Cardiff would be like the nearest place for training. So that was 2 hours. That's 2 hours away from where I'm from. Mm-hmm. So mum and dad, basically dad would be out working. Mum would pick me up from school at 3, drive straight to Cardiff, which is 2 hours. I would train for 2 hours and then she would drive me back. And I had a little sister at the time too. So that was around 5 days a week.
Wow.
So my mum was really happy when I passed my driving test.
Did that affect your relationship with your friends or did it stay the same at the time?
No, massively. I think I did really struggle in school, because when you're in school as well, obviously now I'm older, so it's not the same, but I just remember you miss one day in school and you literally feel like you've missed like 6 months.
Yeah.
Because when you're that age, there's so much that goes on in the day, and also relationships are changing and forming and we're all kind of growing and stuff. So yeah, it was, and also it's really difficult for my friends, I think, at the time to really understand what I was doing. To be honest with you, it still is today. My friends still think I'm a bit mad, but I think they value and understand, or try to understand more now. Whereas when you're a kid, like, yeah, they just think, oh, what is she doing? Just a bit weird. We're getting on with our own stuff. So yeah, to keep relationships in school was definitely difficult.
Is there anything back then that you would do different in terms of that? Or are you quite happy of the path that you followed?
I think I can't have regret, because obviously I've got to where I am now. And obviously, like, I'm really happy with how everything's turned out. I think that definitely along the way, maybe there are times where I actually probably should have really, you know, not chosen to actually go out with friends, or probably like go training a little bit more, especially around that 16, 17 age.
Yeah.
But I guess all those decisions kind of, you know, they haven't hindered me really. Yeah. I'm where I am now because I made those decisions. So yeah, try not to look back in regret or anything, because yeah, obviously the path that I was supposed to be on is where I am today.
Yeah. So in my life, I've played badminton a long time ago, but I'm sure with you being professional, there's so many things you have to do in training, which obviously helps you to get the best performance out. What are some of the elements that are involved in training to play badminton?
So I think that because of the demands of the sport, so we have to be strong but agile. We have to be explosive, but we have to be also quick. And I think balancing, especially, it's also really different between disciplines. So I'm a singles player. So what is a requirement of a singles player is really different to a doubles player or a mixed doubles player. So there's a lot of time on the court. There's a lot of time fine-tuning your craft, I guess, your shots, your technique.
Yeah.
And then off the court, there's a lot of, a lot of fitness, a lot of weight training, a lot of strength training. And it's trying to marry the two up. So trying not to, I've seen some players maybe find on court really difficult and not an enjoyable, and kind of like gravitate more towards the weights and the off court stuff. And then that can affect performance. So and the opposite way around. So it's really hard, I guess, to try and balance everything.
Would you have the same coach for all of that, or is it different individual coaches for the elements of training?
Yeah, so in my experience, it's really crucial for the S&C coach, so strength and conditioning coach, to have a strong relationship with the badminton coach. I think badminton, I would have a badminton coach specifically because obviously they are understanding my sport. But also then there is some background in S&C needed. What are the exercises that will get this and this and this result? But unless there's the cohesion between both, there's definitely times, not specifically with me, but with other, my other friends, my other athletes, where both coaches are maybe pulling in different directions.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a huge balancing act, especially in my sport, given the demands.
Is there, in terms of like strength and conditioning, is there different things that you would see, let's say from a tennis player, that you would have to focus on?
Yeah, so I think that we have our core strength exercises, our squat, our deadlift, our, you know, all those, our bench, like the core exercises. But then I think we have to remember that we are sport specific. So we will also incorporate like strength movements, but based on badminton movements.
Yeah.
Because the requirements of a badminton movement are so different to normal life. For example, you never really lunge the way you do. Even if you're like split squatting, for example, or lunging with a bar, it's not the same as lunging in badminton. So so there's times where I'm in the gym and people are literally looking at me like, what on earth is that girl doing? Because obviously I'm doing badminton movements, trying to do it with weight to replicate the game.
Yeah.
I definitely get some funny looks.
So let's fast forward, and you're competing at a high level. What would you say was the biggest challenge in competing at a professional level?
I think for me is, and I hate to talk about it because I think it's really easy to say, oh yeah, the funding or the finance, but I think it's a really underfunded sport, and you see other countries around the world that have badminton players where maybe the funding is more prioritized to them because the sport is popular. It brings in more income to them. So across the tour, then, for example, the level of funding and the level of finance is so different based on where you're from.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, basically, decisions are made based on can you afford to go or not. So there's some times where I haven't been able to go to tournaments because I just physically can't afford it because it's thousands and thousands of pounds and I just don't have the ability to source that type of money at the time. And then as well, I guess, I had to leave home when I was quite young to continue in training.
Yeah.
And I've only just returned back to Wales now, actually, at 28. So yeah, and I see other players that are able to live at home, live around family, live around friends, and I unfortunately haven't been able to do that based on where I'm from and the requirements of what I need to do, basically.
So what would have to happen for that to change? Because obviously, sports like badminton, you see at the Olympics, and when a sport does well in the Olympics, it tends to get more attention onto it. What do you think? Do you think it has to be something like that, or do you think more funding in terms of like the national lottery and stuff like that? What do you think needs to be done?
I think that there is a lot of it is how much the sport brings in, and obviously we're not a high profile sport in the UK. And I think that badminton is growing. I mean, in Asia, for example, it's huge. And I go to visit schools a lot and the kids say to me, oh, what's it like to be famous? And I'm like, well, in the UK, absolutely no one knows who I am. But if you go to Asia, people know who I am and people want my autograph, and it's really strange.
Yeah.
And I guess it's the same the opposite way when the Asian players come over here, no one has a clue who they are, and it's probably really strange for them. I think that it's really difficult, and the way that the sport is structured across, especially for us, because we're the UK rather than just one whole one country, and how the funding is divided is really tricky. I still don't completely understand it, and I've been in the sport 20 years. But hopefully now that social media is helping, badminton is becoming more attractive.
Yeah.
I think also it needs to be more visual. Like, we need to get out there more. The more it's seen, the more it's heard, the more it's known as well, I think.
You mentioned when you started it was 50p.
Yeah.
Is it still quite affordable for people that want to start playing badminton?
I think equipment-wise, I would say yeah. I would say that obviously you need rackets, you need court shoes, but at the bare minimum, equipment-wise, if you're not having the top-of-the-range stuff, you can just go and hire a local leisure centre court. But I think to get to the top of the game, to get, you know, on the world stage, then that is where the finance comes in. And I think that's where a lot of people, that's the balance that people maybe then move away from the sport, because financially it is just so draining. And there's a lot of talented players that probably could have made the next step to the world stage, but just don't have decided that it's not for them based on that. But yeah, like for a starting out sport, I think it's quite easy to start off. It's just that, it's just that back end then when you make that decision of what, that's why my parents sat me down so early, because it does start to cost a lot of money then.
Yeah. Before you have a match, obviously sports is a lot mentally. How do you prepare mentally for the matches that you have? Is there certain things that you do?
I think that it's really based on a feeling as well. So I can turn up to a tournament and had a horrible journey, been delayed, lost my bags, I don't know, something like that. And actually, when I get there, I'm ready to go, because I'm thinking, I'm quite frustrated at how it's been. Or sometimes you can have the best week's training before, you can feel amazing, you can wake up on the morning and you feel pretty rubbish. And that's not something that you can really control. I would say that I have kind of a set routine, like a set playlist that I would listen to, a set warm-up, that type of thing. But your overall feeling, based on the demands of my sport, is not really something that you can control. And that's something that you have to learn how to try to manage, to try to get the best out of yourself, I think.
Is there, when you're in the middle of a match and let's say it's not going the way you want to go, you want it to go, sorry. Is there certain things that you do to help you mentally to get through those periods?
Yeah, I think that there are certain things that you can, in for my sport, that you can try to do. Like, for example, if you're playing, and I'm a shot player, so I rely a lot on my skill. So sometimes you can just turn up and badminton is such fine detail. So the difference between in and out is huge. And I think that sometimes you can just be off on your shots, or you could feel sluggish and stuff like that. And I think you have to back yourself. In that instance, I would back myself that the training that I've done would mean that I could graft it out a little bit and maybe play a little bit safer into court, knowing that I'm going to have to work harder because I'm not going to hit so many winners. So that's mentally kind of my go-to places. If I'm not playing well, okay, how do I get myself out of this hole? Okay, I need to graft hard. But in all honesty, sometimes you turn up and you literally, I've been in situations where I literally can't hit the shot lower than that. And I have no understanding and no reason why. So yeah, it's a very, it's because of the demands of the sport, it's quite a mental challenge as well as physical. And sometimes you could physically feel great and mentally feel rubbish as well.
It's a sport that it could go on for ages in terms of time and length. Is there certain things in terms of nutrition that most badminton players would focus on eating?
I think each person is really individual, especially the demands of the sport again as well, because I would say that singles is more physically demanding versus doubles, especially for the woman in mixed as well. I think that the top players are all... all trying to give themselves the best nutrition. I think for me, if I feel good, if I feel like I've eaten well, if I feel in a good space, then I perform well. Specifically, I will just have my, just my combinations of stuff, my fruits, my carbs, my protein, and it try to in each meal. And yeah, there are some times when we are playing games, we'll have a snack or something in our bag, a gel, if it is a longer game. But yeah, there's no specific like, oh, I have to have this. It's just, as well, when you travel, it's just trying to keep as consistent as possible. Because especially if you go to countries that what you normally eat is not readily available, it's a little bit more difficult. And as well, different cultures, different foods.
Yeah.
You have to take that into consideration as well.
Can that sometimes impact your mood before competition? If you get to a country and it has got any stuff you eat?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think as well, after like long journeys,
yeah,
you just feel rubbish anyway. You feel quite sluggish. Yeah. And basically it's just a competition with yourself to try to make yourself feel better again.
Yeah.
But yeah, I have been to some countries and I went to Cuba, for example,
yeah,
which was a great country, but stuff isn't readily available there. So you're kind of having to find stuff, make do. And yeah, it's tricky. Sometimes half your day is taken up from trying to find food that you can eat, and you have to be also careful about change of water and all stuff like that. So there's always thinking about stuff like that.
I want to talk a little bit about playing internationally. How was it like for you the first time you did that?
I think I was quite young compared to a lot of players, because I was quite, obviously Wales isn't a huge country, but I was quite talented quite young.
Yeah.
So I stepped onto the world stage very early.
Yeah.
And I think I was like too young to really comprehend what was going on. I think even now, until I retire completely, I think I won't really understand or comprehend what I'm doing. At the time, you're just like, oh, I've been chosen to play for Wales. Yeah, it's really cool, but this is like the normal thing to do.
You just
kind of get on with it, and at the time I was surrounded by a lot of senior players.
Yeah.
So I was just like the little young up and coming one that
just
tagged along and just, tried to get on with it. But yeah, no, I think when I retire, maybe I will look back and be like, oh, actually that was quite cool. What I did.
So you've competed internationally for Wales, but you also competed internationally for Poland. What was the reason for that?
So basically in the middle of lockdown, my coach at the time, he got offered a job out in Poland as the national coach. And I was unable to train in the UK because based on lockdown and all that type of stuff.
Yeah.
And I was basically seeing countries all over the world being allowed like a dispensation, being allowed back on the court. And we were in really heavy lockdown, and I felt like I was at a disadvantage.
Yeah.
So when he got offered that job, the option on the table was also for me to go, which I did.
Yeah.
And basically after a while, because of Brexit as well, so we moved in the middle of October 2020, I think.
Okay.
Literally height of the pandemic. And then Brexit happened, and then I had to start applying for visas and start trying to leave the country to go to tournaments, and it was getting really difficult. So because I saw myself there probably long term, it just made sense to change the flag to Poland. I needed to show why I was there, and because obviously I didn't have a salary, I wasn't working, I couldn't have a working visa. So I did, and I have support from them, and it was great whilst I was there. But then I made the decision to come back to Wales then, probably just over a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
And now, I have my Welsh flag back.
Was there any feeling from fans in terms of changing nationality, or was there none at all?
No, I think still people are a bit confused.
Mm.
Like, oh, she's back, or what happened, or... I think that at the time it was the right thing to do, and at the time it was the right thing to come back.
Yeah.
So I don't have any regrets about that. I think that it needed to happen, otherwise I wasn't able to play.
Yeah.
But no, there are some, yeah, there was definitely a lot of questions being asked. My DMs were quite busy.
Yeah.
Just answering some questions and stuff like that. But
yeah,
I have fond memories living there. It was a lovely country. I was treated really, really well.
Yeah.
But I think I didn't really understand also the value of being Welsh. I'm quite patriotic, quite a patriotic nation.
Yeah.
And I didn't really think the change would really bother me that much.
Yeah.
But I think actually towards the end, I was really craving to have my identity back, I think.
Yeah. So next year is a big year in terms of sports. What would you say your focus is going forward in terms of what you can achieve and compared to what you've achieved so far?
I think that my focus has definitely changed.
Mm.
Since returning back to Wales specifically, I would say, because when I returned from Poland, I returned back to England where I was living, and now I've come back to Wales to live full time.
Yeah.
I think that I'm at the back end of my career, so I think that I'm I have one eye on transitioning, but I'm also really keen to finish on a high over the next couple of years, really get the most out of what I can do and kind of finish with no regrets.
Yeah.
I think just keep plugging away, keep on the tour, keep enjoying it. I'm playing league. I'm going to be playing some more tournaments now over the next few months.
Yeah.
And just making sure that I'm getting the most out of myself in the sport before then I make that huge, scary transition. But I won't be doing just yet. But it's definitely a different mindset to probably 2-3 years ago.
What do you think is going to be the key things? Because I have quite close friends who've recently retired from their sports, and they mentioned how difficult it was mentally in terms of adapting to just a way of living and what they're used to. What do you think are the things that are going to help you get through those periods?
I think that I'm somebody that would really struggle to transition, and I know that I'm very self-aware of that.
Yeah.
So I have been proactively trying to make that transition as smooth as possible, because I'm somebody that really, I love to have something to do, a purpose. And I also see players in my own sport that maybe have sacrificed a lot for the sport, maybe haven't been to university, or maybe haven't studied, or maybe haven't even thought about that time of transition until the day of transition, and kind of been at a loss. And I think that I would have been the same. And because I am self-aware of that, I've tried to position myself in situations where I have a focus, I have a purpose, trying to share my knowledge, share my experiences, and get roles that I can do alongside my training that also then can potentially expand then when I do decide to retire completely.
Last question. So in terms of your mindset, what do you think are the three biggest strengths that you have?
I would say number one is graft, which is something that's instilled in from my parents. My parents are really hard workers, really grafters, you know, come from a really normal background. I think that I am determined. So if you tell me no, I'm gonna prove you wrong.
Yeah.
I really am. I feel strongly about that. And I think I have a winning mentality. I want to do well in anything that I do. I want to be the best at it.
Yeah.
I think that's got me quite far. Even, I know this sounds stupid, but I wanted to be the best. I don't know. Even when I was young in school, I wanted to be the best. I wanted to be the captain. I wanted to be the number one player on the team. And I think that that combination then has led me to, being Jordan the badminton player.
Jordan, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for coming on. This has been a great episode. I hope you've enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's amazing. Thank you so much.
Good. Thanks for having you on.